Hello and welcome to the Hypnotic Half Hour podcast with your host, me, Jason Simmons. This is the podcast where I interview the most interesting and inspirational people from the world of hypnosis to find out what it is that makes them so successful. My guest today is hypnotherapist and coach Kelly T. Woods. In this interview, I find out how Kelly works with children and how she uses the parents as props to assist the therapy process. I also find out how Kelly was influenced as a hypnotherapist and how she became interested in this wonderful subject. So sit back, relax, and listen to my half an hour with Kelly T. Woods. Thanks for taking the time out of your day to join me today. And sort of the purpose of the podcast, Kelly, is to really find out sort of how people became interested in hypnosis and how it is that they work and what they do. And I'm looking at sort of getting different things from people from different backgrounds within hypnosis, you know, sort of covering stage therapy, even street to some extent, and sort of magic performers as well. Again, thanks for coming on, Kelly. And I suppose the first question I'd like to ask you is how did you become interested in hypnosis yourself?
Well, first I'll answer, thank you very much for having me on your podcast. I think it's a wonderful idea to have such a diversity of different backgrounds. I accidentally encountered hypnosis. I had gone on a blind date, and while I didn't fall for the gentleman, boy, what he was talking about was fascinating to me. And as soon as I got home, I started researching the whole field of hypnotherapy. And within a month, I had found a one-year course at a local community college and enrolled. And that was the beginning.
Right. Okay. So it was from that sort of chance date, if you like, or having that date that sort of piqued your interest in hypnosis. There was no sort of background before that, or anything that you'd seen that sort of piqued your interest in the subject at all.
No, not formally. And I think it's just a great example of being at the right place at the right time in my life. And you know, that's happened for so many people that have made an impact or been successful in a field, is timing was everything. And it was for me. I had just sold a business. I had an Ignition Interlock dealership. And so I had taken the summer off and was just kind of exploring possibilities.
Sure. And so when was that in terms of time? Like how many years ago was that that you took that course?
That was 17 years ago.
Right, 17 years ago. And was that because you're based in Washington, is that right?
Yes, I'm in Washington State, up in the Pacific Northwest.
And so you picked a course sort of locally to where you're based now, and so what did that course entail at the time? Like,
it was a basic certification course, and I think why that particular one was, I feel very fortunate, was because it was conducted over that entire school year. I really got a chance to absorb the material, and we both know that it doesn't take a lot to learn how to hypnotize. You can certainly do that in a weekend course, but all of the nuances that are going to, you know, help to enable you to hang a shingle out and be able to therapeutically help is certainly more complex and takes more time. And I was also pleased that I didn't know what I didn't know when I started, because I jumped right into a practice following that training.
Sure.
And I think it would have been easy to be intimidated if I realized how much more I had to learn. But of course, I'm a lifelong learner, and I'm still constantly adjusting and questioning my own beliefs. And I think that that's what makes a resilient and effective hypnotist, in my opinion.
Yeah. Okay. So you're continually sort of doing courses yourself, then, even though you're sort of at the level that you are in your field?
Well, I'm a consummate reader, and my clients are my best teachers. Sometimes I catch myself thinking that I know a lot, and then they'll correct me.
Sure. And have you got an example of where that may have happened, say, recently, or may have been a time that's happened to you where that sort of sticks out in your mind?
Certainly. I think I have a specialty in working with children and teenagers, and teenagers in particularly will always be bringing up some new little hook. And, you know, as much as we all want to help everybody, I'm reminded often of the fact that the kids have to have the buy-in. And as enthusiastic as parents are, unless their teenagers are willing to engage, it's going to be pretty difficult. And I work online, so just recently I had a teen who didn't even want to be in the camera range. Wow. And was just so reticent and not participating that I, you know, had to come to that conclusion that this was not the right approach for this particular kid.
Sure. And so in any sort of scenario like that, how would you change up your approach to, you know, to have a successful outcome in that session?
Well, I directed my attention towards the parent that was present. And we know there's a thing such as secondary hypnosis. And so I work directly with the parent. And, you know, I haven't quite heard the results yet, but I'm hoping that that was effective as far as making some movement. And at the very least, I know that that very mothered and concerned mother was getting some relief just from our interaction.
Sure. And because I read your book, The Integrative Hypnosis for Kids. And I read in that you said that you use the parents as props. So how do you do that within a session?
Yeah, that's something that happens quite a bit. And it begins just with that initial phone inquiry from a parent. In order to work with their child, I ask them to agree with me that they will do anything I ask them to do when they're in my office setting. And they always do. And so it's no surprise to them if I ask to be able to demonstrate a technique with them or hypnotize them directly or even suggest that the kid do something. Sometimes we might be learning how to do EFT, for example, or some other shifting of states. And so empowering a kid by having them orchestrate that on their parent is kind of a twist of power in the whole relationship, and it can make things move just on its own.
Sure. And when you're working with children or teenagers, do you find that sort of easier or more difficult, or is there no difference between that and working with adults?
You know, often I think it is easier if you can join them in their world. If we stay in some rigid adult realm, then it's going to be much more difficult to, number one, gain any kind of rapport with them, but it's not as fun. So I really like working with the kids because my very creative side comes out.
Sure. And what sort of approaches would you use when working with children? Like, is there, do you have like a structured session or does your, are you quite fluid in how you deliver a session with children or with adults?
I think with all clients, and they're all children anyway, it needs to be very flexible. And while we have a basic structure of things that we want to complete in a session and a flow of that, being able to utilize what that client is presenting to us is of utmost importance, in my opinion. I was just seeing a post online in Richard Nongard's group asking about book references for working in metaphor. And, you know, I think that the metaphors that our clients bring to us are the best ones. And especially when they're stuck or frozen ones, we can help them get them moving. And that means just really being present, listening to what they're bringing to us. I mean, there's often people looking for scripts, for example, Jason, and scripts are great. I use scripts for ideas, and I write scripts sometimes if I'm making a recording for a client. But really, especially with children, they bring you the script. You just listen for those salient points, and you can weave anything with their language and their imagery.
Sure. And when you're working with different people, do you work in a specific field? Like, you know, some people sort of specialize in, like, say, anxiety or or they might specialize in sports performance, or do you take a general approach to therapy in so much that you would treat anything or endeavor to help anyone with anything that they came into you with?
No, I've pretty much maintained a general practice with, you know, that a couple of side specialties. And I think that keeps me on my toes. The fact that I don't turn away smokers or weight loss clients or phobias, I enjoy the variety. I've had several businesses in my life, and this is the one that I'm never tired of. I'm never bored. And I think it's because those new challenges are always walking in.
Yeah. And when you're working with sort of different people and that, I mean, what sort of things would you be looking to? What would be the main things sort of that you say people come to see you for at the moment?
Well, here in our country, and I suspect it's the same over in the UK, there are a lot of chronic issues. And when I'm speaking of chronic issues, of course, there's illnesses that people are suffering from, but there's anxiety, there's unmanaged stress, there are sleep disorders, there is obesity, anything that's been going on for a bit of time becomes chronic, and people start to have an identity about it. They've also tapped out all of the traditional resources. They've been chasing answers, and we know that often we're kind of one of the last resorts that they might reach out to. But I'm excited to see how hypnotherapy is being integrated more into Western medicine, and I'm part of our town's cancer care clinic's integrative team, so I get referrals from the staff there to help their patients who are undergoing cancer treatment. And there are a lot of things that we can do with hypnosis to make that whole journey more comfortable and even more effective.
Yeah, sure. So in the UK, there is sort of quite a stigma still attached with hypnotherapy. It's gradually changing, but do you find that you get that same sort of resistance in America, or is it generally more accepted that now that hypnotherapy is a sort of valid form of therapy?
That's a great question, and I feel very fortunate to be located geographically where I am, because Washington State itself has a pretty long history of having hypnotherapy be successful here. It's gone back decades. But you can look in other parts of our country, maybe, you know, in the Deep South, for example, where there is more resistance and suspicion about it. So you know, the United States of America is like a bunch of different countries. It kind of depends where you are.
And why do you think there's that big divide, say, between sort of where you are and say the South? Like, is it down to sort of an education, or is there some other reason that causes that?
Well, it probably is based in belief systems. It's the Down South is also known as the Bible Belt, and so although you know we even have many people who work in Christian hypnotherapy. So I think as people become more educated, the resistance is tumbling. And also as people are being failed by pharmaceutical approaches, then they're looking for these other things that can help. And I'm really loathe to use the word alternative, because hypnosis and other CAM therapies are not alternative. They're so integrative. And in fact, often they can be a frontline approach. You know, that's one of the reasons that I love working with teens, for example, is I know that the teenagers who are able to get a handle on their anxiety, to recover from depression through the work that we do, are probably going to be able to avoid having to go that pharmaceutical route. And to me, that's a joy, especially when you're seeing some of the stories about how people are having such a difficult time getting off of those drugs.
Yeah, because I guess, if children are sort of highly medicated from a young age, it's got quite a negative impact, or can have quite a negative impact on their life, going into adulthood.
It can, you know, it's keeping them from building that natural resilience. And they can also have some permanent damage to their nervous systems. Those are developing brains.
And I mean, here in the UK, hypnotherapy is sort of is highly unregulated, really. I mean, is that the same case in Washington, or because I know you mentioned that sort of America as a is a number of sort of smaller countries, if you like. So does it vary from state to state on regulation? And
it really does. And in Washington State, we are lightly regulated by our Department of Health, and we're awarded status of being a registered hypnotherapist. And so there is some recourse for consumers if they have a complaint or something. But many states don't have any regulation at all, and few states have some very strong regulations. So even it's not even legal to be a hypnotherapist, but a hypno coach is allowed. And, you know, ultimately it comes down, I think, to the individual practitioner's levels of integrity and ethics. And there's always going to be someone who doesn't care about that and just has, you know, money as a main motivator. And don't get me wrong, I love making money, and I'm happy that I can make enough money to continue to do this work. But we need to be self-regulating and work within our scope of practice. And I think that's the main reason why people should be educated. And, you know, work is part of a team. I know what kinds of cases are out of my scope of practice, and I really want the best for my clients. So I make sure that I'm helping them find that help if they need it.
Sure. And I know in addition to being a therapist yourself, you've written a number of books, including, as I mentioned earlier, Integrative Hypnosis for Kids. And you've also sort of co-written Virtual Reality Hypnosis. So what does that entail in that book? Because I haven't actually read that myself as yet. But I saw it when I was looking you up before. I was quite interested in that.
Well, that was a great book to write. It was fun to write. I wrote it with Don Gibbons, who is a highly educated psychiatrist located on the opposite side of the country. And we wrote it all online. I've never had the pleasure of meeting him in person. But we had met on hypnothoughts.com years ago and realized that we were using a similar approach with clients. Neither of us are big fans of the old regress to cause approach. Yeah. And we're coming up with alternatives to that, where we could help people reframe experiences in their life without having to delve back and risk re-traumatizing them. And so the idea of utilizing the multiverse, alternate and parallel universes, to help people make those changes. And, you know, sometimes you might even think of it as implanting false memories, although they consciously knew the difference. When they would come back from these hypnotic journeys, they felt different. And really, that's one of the powers of hypnosis, is taking advantage of that ability to suspend disbelief and to change the emotional charge. And so we wrote a book that talks about our approach in it and has a lot of different case studies, giving examples of how we could help people solve certain challenges or relieve themselves of experiences that were keeping them stuck.
Sure. Yeah. And I know, like, in addition to that, you're also running sort of a number of talks and courses. I don't know how you fit it all in, but you've got some online courses. So you've got your hypnosis for with kids, working with kids and children. And then there's the cancer care support hypnosis certification training that you do. Is that a physical course, or do you do that as an online course as well?
That's an online course that I did with Roger Moore. And again, these are these wonderful collaborations that I've been able to forge. And, you know, for the first probably 5 or 6 years of my career, I was pretty isolated up here in the corner of the country and just plugging away, building my practice. And it was Scott Sandlin's hypnothoughts.com that connected me with some of these people, Michael Ellner, who became one of my beloved mentors. He passed away almost a year ago. he was one of those people that I met, and we started a hope coaching program, which is helping those people with chronic issues. And and whenever we collaborate with people, we learn so much. It really expands our own perspectives, and I think it's a really enjoyable thing to do, and would recommend if anybody has an opportunity to do that, whether it's writing a book or teaching a course or running a workshop together, to give it a go. It's fantastic.
Yeah, because I guess it can be quite a lonely road sometimes if you're not doing those collaborations or not speaking with someone else. You know, it's like it's like any other self-employed job in that respect.
Well, it is, and even more so because hypnosis works fairly quickly. Those clients come in and out of our lives. We have this intimate relationship with them, and then they're doing better and they're gone. So to have consistency of relationships is a really nice thing to do. And I love how the hypnosis community has evolved over the last decade to be so much more inclusive, less competitive. There's so much sharing. I have an online private group of women who work in hypnosis. About 6 years ago, I saw that there was a need for just a safe place for women to be able to exchange ideas and talk with each other, and I started it. It's almost 3,000 members now. And it's a great resource for many of those women who are alone in their own areas, and they can come on that site and ask questions and just get that, you know, not only ideas, but just the emotional support from others.
Sure. Yeah, because I saw as well that you also run an Empowering Women Through Skill workshop as well. So what does that involve when you run that? And do you deliver that as a group sort of workshop? Or
yes, you know, females do have some specific differences, as much as we all want to think that we're equal. And I celebrate those differences. And even some of that might be, you know, within brain structure and within certain challenges that they have. And so identifying those things and providing answers is important. One of the things that I do in my practice, you know, in the beginning of this interview, you complimented my perseverance. We had a little sound issue to start out with. And, you know, I think that that's in my DNA. My mother's from Finland, and the Finns have a national word called sisu, S-I-S-U. And sisu encompasses this never give up perseverance, this, you know, dogged sticking to whatever needs to be done. And I grew up with that, and that was modeled for me from my own parents. And this is a theme that I have in my work. And, you know, whether it's a female client, a male client, a child, or an 88-year-old, helping them find their own sisu within them so that it can lift them up in past challenges is a goal that I have.
Yeah. And being a woman in hypnotherapy, do you find it has its own challenges, or do you find that there's anything, I don't know, any, or there were any struggles that you had sort of at the beginning as opposed to now?
You know, actually, no. I think it might be an advantage. Well, I say that because I'm a woman, but you know, female clients, I think, feel quite safe with me. I'm also 60 years old, so I'm of an age that isn't threatening in any way to anyone. You know, more of a motherly or grandmotherly figure, which, you know, all of these things are very subtle, but they can make a difference.
Yeah, and that helps, you think, with the sort of rapport building process.
I think it can, but, you know, that's my belief, and I'm a big believer in the power of a practitioner's belief. Yeah. When I believe things, they seem to happen much more readily. And of course, that makes sense. We as hypnotists understand that. But there's even research that shows, for example, that when a doctor believes in the treatment that he's prescribing, it's more effective. And so when we believe in certain things, they come true more. And of course, I believe in my client's ability to heal or overcome those challenges or to make the changes that they're thinking about. So I have that same belief about myself, that I'm able to help them. And I think that has its own energy of itself, because belief and expectation are such important ingredients in what we do.
Yeah, definitely. So you said in your that most of your sessions now are conducted either via or online. Do you do sort of in-person sessions as well, or would you say that the main bulk of what you do is an online, like Zoom or Skype or something like that?
Oh, no, I have a very busy in-person practice. I have an office in my beautiful town here. I live on an island, actually. It's connected by a bridge, and I'm in a historic building, and it's a great vibe. I do probably, I'd say maybe 20 to 25% of my sessions are online at this point.
And when you do deliver an online session, would you say that it differs from what you would do if you were sitting in the room with the person, or would it be this exactly the same sort of process that you go through?
Well, I think you have to be able to adjust. Obviously, you're not having that proximity to a client, and sometimes you're limited in being able to watch all of the visual cues of, you know, their nonverbals that are going on. But there are other advantages too. For example, when working with children, they're already attuned to screen time. Yeah. They have no problem at all relating to that and going into their own little trances. Yeah. So, and you know, I think that just really monitoring where the client is, getting a little bit more feedback from them, you know, whether it's through some verbal or head nods or something, is important because of that limitation. But I haven't found it to be, you know, any more challenging. It's been pretty rare where I've had, you know, a call dropped or anything like that. So the technology now is so much more reliable than it was even 5 years ago.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely improved. As today's podcast sort of proved, you know, it's improved massively over the last few years, because this wouldn't have been impossible so maybe 10 years ago. Who would you say like influenced you when you began working in hypnosis, and is there anyone that continues to influence what you do in particular?
Oh, well, let's see. I mentioned Michael Ellner. I think he was someone who really got me to expand my thought processes beyond that initial training, and to realize that some of the things that I thought I knew maybe weren't really true. And he was kind of a provocative thinker. Mm-hmm. Michael was a great influence. Richard Nongard also, who has a background in mental health counseling, has turned me on to, you know, a lot of the points in positive psychology, which I was doing without really knowing that I was doing it. And so that ratified to me that I was on the right track. And, you know, when we take those things and we use them in hypnosis, it's like supercharging them. And of course, my clients are, as I mentioned before, I'm constantly learning from them, their experiences and the things that they bring. I recently had a woman who was, you know, complaining about her negative self-talk. And then she told me that, well, I just call that fake news. And I love that frame. And so I started using it, and she came back the next week and I thanked her. I said, hey, you know, I used that, your fake news.
Yeah, because it's so of the time now, isn't it, as well?
It is, right. And she said, but you told me that. And she was convinced it was my idea. Well, that's fine. So sometimes we don't know if it's a dream or reality. I love gleaning little tidbits like that from my clients. And children are wonderful at that. I had a child who was struggling with a problem, and she happened to tell me about her dream beanie, that every night before she went to bed, she would make the setting on her beanie for the kind of dream that she wanted. And I thought that was brilliant.
And what would you say have been the most profound things that you've sort of, you know, experiences that you've had in all your time as a therapist?
Oh, wow. There are so many. I mean, but one that really sticks out for me, Jason, was a client whose mother I had worked with, and she called me and asked if I could help her son. He was in his 30s and going through a treatment for a brain tumor, and he was having quite a bit of nausea from the chemotherapy. And so I invited him to come and visit me, and we took care of that problem. And I continued to work with him through his treatment and unfortunate decline. And one day he didn't show up for a session, and I called and left a message. And he did call me back the next day and apologized because he had had to take his wife to the hospital. She had had pretty terrible abdominal pain. Well, after a few hours, she gave birth to a baby girl, and they didn't know that she was pregnant. So this was their first child, and unfortunately the man died about 2 months later, but he got to see his child be born and those 2 months with the baby, and they called her the miracle kid. And about a year later, the grandmother contacted me and asked if I would make a hypnosis sleep recording because the baby was having a hard time sleeping. And that was one of my favorite things to do, making that recording for that little kid and making references to her daddy that I knew. So those are the things that stick with us. And even though some of them might be painful, they really give meaning to what we do. And I know that, you know, this is what I'm supposed to be doing here in this life. And I feel so fortunate.
Yeah. Yeah, it must be really rewarding to have that, you know, have that connection with that family, even through that, you know, tragic time, and to be able to sort of continue assisting them, you know, even after the passing of their son and their father.
It really is, and it just reminds me that it all boils down to the relationships that we have, you know, whether they're with our clients or with colleagues or you know, in our own personal lives, that's everything comes down to it. And, you know, in business, relationships are everything. Yeah. And so it all loops around to the ideas of integrity and you know, how hard it is to gain trust and how easy it is to lose it. And so to be always paying attention to that and operating in the right way, I think is important.
Yeah. Yeah, is it important? And so Kelly, I know that you've got quite a few talks coming up this year. I mean, are there any that sort of spring to mind that you've got that you might want to let our listeners at home know about?
Well, yeah, I'll be down at the HypnoThoughts Live conference in the end of August in Las Vegas, and looking forward to that. And your buddy Freddie Jacquin is coming over, and he and I are doing a course on working with children, but even more importantly, helping adults empower the kids in their lives. And we've named it the Keen Course. And so we're looking forward to that. And that's kind of going to be the highlight of this year. I did quite a bit of traveling last year and got to come over to the UK, which was an awesome time. But I like having the variety. It'll continue. Yeah.
And have you got any plans to be at the UK Hypnosis Convention this year, or is that not on the cards at the moment?
Not as of this time. Sure. I have some other vacation plans.
Oh, nice. And I suppose my last question to you, Kelly, is if there was one piece of advice that you could give anyone either starting out as a hypnotherapist or perhaps someone that's a bit further down the track that you felt would have, you know, maybe improve their practice or what they do, then what would that bit of advice be?
Oh, to continue to develop their own creativity in whatever way they can, whether it's, you know, through their own preferred art or just even telling stories to themselves, recording them. I think that the more that we prime that part of our mind, the easier it's going to be for us to join a client in, you know, wherever they are, and to help be their guide to wherever they need to be. You know, creativity is probably my greatest attribute, and my mind automatically goes there. And I think that it also helps to promote a positive mindset. When we're flexible in what we're paying attention to, then we don't get as stuck as often as you might think.
But finally, I mean, is there anything else that you wanted to mention? If people want to find out more about you, like how can they, or where can they visit to find out more about you, Kelly?
I have a website, woodshypnosis.com, yep. and they can find me on Facebook, Kelly T. Woods, and I'm always welcome new friends, and if you want to bump heads and talk about stuff, I'm available, so, yeah.
All right, well, I'll stick that in the show notes as well for this episode, so that'll be available under the episode, but I really want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to talk to me today. I know it's probably quite early where you are at the moment. It's about 2 o'clock in the afternoon here, so I'm guessing it's going to be about 6 or 7 o'clock
where you right are. And thanks for accommodating me. I mean, I would have loved to exchange with you at 3 a.m. but this was better. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Well, thanks a lot for your time, Kelly, and hopefully I'll get to talk to you again in the near future, but have a great day and thanks again.
You too, Jason. Bye-bye.
All right, cheers. Bye-bye. So that was my interview with hypnotherapist and coach Kelly T. Woods. If you enjoyed that podcast, I'd like you to rate and review us on the podcast app of your choice. And if you'd like to find out more about Kelly's work, you can follow the links below in the show notes of this podcast. If you've got any suggestions for future guests, or if you'd like to be a guest yourself, then please feel free to email me at mappingmindshypnosis@gmail.com or visit the website www.mappingminds.co.uk. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to seeing you on next week's podcast.